Okay, everybody, welcome to the show. Gideon, how is it going this week, man?
Going well. Work's going good. I might go see Furiosa again with my friend Saturday. Excited for that. Started Pentiment. Having a lot of fun with
Nice.
that.
A lot of fun reading.
Yeah, honestly, a shocking amount of fun reading
Yeah.
it. So, but yeah, I'm having fun. Yeah, not doing too much else, so can't complain.
Cool. So without spoiling things, how far are you in Pentiment? Are you to the point where like there is something to be investigated yet, or no?
Not quite. I've been like talking to everybody and exploring a lot.
Okay.
But I passed the first night, and I think it's like just after that morning where it's like raining and
Okay.
everything. So, but I haven't like gone back to the Abbey really yet.
Yeah. Okay. So you haven't gotten to the point where the plot really takes off. But yeah, you're gonna get there pretty soon, and it's
It feels like something's coming, just the
yeah,
something's in
for
the
sure.
air.
There's a foreboding nature, absolutely. And for somebody that I have a really hard time with like narrative heavy games or games with like a lot of reading or something like that, and I still think Pentiment is just so good. So, and that's like literally all it is
Yeah.
fucking reading and trying to like. You know, it's kind of like how I feel about Disco Elysium, where like I've been afraid to try it because I feel like my reading level isn't high enough to actually enjoy the game. Like everybody that I know that likes Disco Elysium is like way smarter than I am, so I'm a little like intimidated by it. But you know, maybe we'll get there. So yeah,
We'll reach that
you have to,
appreciation.
yeah, you have to keep me up to date on Pentiment and any other games you're playing. Neil, how's it going this week, man? Well, aside from work stuff, which we already talked about.
Overall okay. Managed to get back in the gym on Monday for the first time in a couple weeks, so that was, bad but good.
Okay, did you listen to music while you were in the gym?
Yeah.
Okay, what were you listening to?
Basically like a Sabaton, Amon Amarth, that kind of mix on
Yeah.
Spotify.
So a bunch of like Viking metal, basically.
Yeah, basically.
Okay, no Dragon Ball Z OST or Metal Gear Rising Revengeance OST yet.
Like I have a fondness for Dragon Ball Z, but I didn't get into it in the same way as I know a lot of other people did.
Yeah.
Like my main experience with it was the Dragon Ball Z Abridged series that came out while we were in
Oh,
college.
yeah. Well, I think if you probably like somehow pulled what everybody was listening to at any gym on the planet at any given time, like I would say there's a solid chance that like Dragon Ball Z OST would be like one of the top things playing in any given gym on the planet. I mean that I've never set foot in a gym like that, but from my limited experience, it seems like people at the gym are sometimes pretty into Dragon Ball Z. I know if I was in there, it would be like the Metal Gear Rising soundtrack, though. Holy shit, dude. Get pumped up. Gideon knows what I'm talking about. He's a
Oh
fan.
yeah, fucking hell yeah! I can visualize it. It's awesome.
Just going fucking nuts on
montage. Oh my god. Yeah.
rules of nature. Okay.
I did catch up on a couple of movies that have been in my like to-do list for a while.
Yeah.
Over the
Tell us
weekend,
about it.
I watched The Green Knight, another A24 movie.
Yep.
I've been wanting to watch that. What do you think about that one?
I'm still unpacking it, honestly. But I enjoyed it.
Okay.
I think it warrants a rewatch, just
Okay.
knowing what I know now, kind of thing.
That's interesting. I heard, obviously it's A24, there's a general level of like this is just commonly accepted as a great movie, that kind of comes along with that. But I had heard some people are it, I heard it's like kind of more divisive than a
Yeah.
lot of A24 stuff.
Seems like a love it or hate it for some
Yeah.
people.
I think it's definitely just worth watching, just to sort of see what the fuss is about. But I enjoyed it, but I have questions that may sort of change how much I enjoyed it. So I just need to do more thinking about it. It's kind of the long and the short of it.
Cool, man.
But
All
it's
right.
a very visually impressive movie and made for like no money. I think like less than $15 million.
Damn, that's impressive. Okay.
And what else besides Green Knight?
And then I've mentioned this before, and I think I sent Gideon the link for it, but I finally sat down and watched the re-cobbled cuts of The Thief and the Cobbler, which is this like movie that was in production hell for like 60 years.
Yeah.
Just like lots of missed deadlines because the lead animator was very particular about like what he wanted to do with it. But it's like Vincent Price's last performance.
Oh, cool.
And he steals the show as the antagonist of the movie. But really, it's the animation style that it just bleeds character.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of like M.C. Escher-esque like use of black and white tiles that like all like you're like the character's walking along and it turns it like, you know, black and white checkerboard floor. And then the next one, the black is actually like a hole in the ground. So like Looney Tune-esque gags, but they work in the context of the movie. Okay. I don't know. It's just very interesting to watch. Like the story itself isn't anything to write home about, I don't think, but just as like a visual spectacle, definitely interesting.
Okay. Yeah, that is interesting. You guys have brought that up several times, so maybe one of these days I'm going to have to check that out.
You know, it's only an hour and 40 minutes.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the plus thing of a lot of animated films is that because they're so expensive, they generally tend to be pretty short and kind of tight as a result. So this week we are talking about the 1998?
98.
Jim Carrey movie, The Truman Show, which was brought to the podcast by Gideon. I think everybody is like colloquially familiar with this movie. Like if you haven't seen it, you're at least familiar with the premise because the premise is so interesting. So Gideon, why'd you bring it to the podcast?
Yeah, so I know you hadn't seen this. This definitely for me feels like a movie that you've heard about it or seen memes from it. It's pretty well known. But I definitely think it warrants being a movie like everybody should probably see if they have the opportunity. So I thought it'd just be a good, another brisk, you know, not too long movie we could talk about. And I thought it made me think about Videodrome and like that'd be an interesting double feature, you know. Maybe, like if you want to have more of a, you know, upbeat, I guess, kind of watch, you could start with this or you could end with Truman Show. It's just I just thought that'd be funny either or, but yeah, so mainly wanted to bring on since you hadn't seen it, hear your thoughts on it, hear how it held up for you and stuff.
Absolutely. Well, Neil, had you ever seen this movie before?
At some point when I was living in Grinnell, my dad signed me up for like a college mentor situation. And at one point we went into like one of the Grinnell College common rooms and we just watched The Truman Show when I was probably like 10.
Oh. Well, that's interesting. Okay. You didn't get like molested in the process or anything like that?
Not that I remember.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good.
Here's to hoping.
Okay. Well, you know, I was, of course, like familiar, I think, like this is one of those movies that like almost people almost use as like a verb, right? Like when they're like like when they're suspicious that the government is spying on them or whatever, they're like, it's, you know, I'm getting Truman Showed, you know, like I feel like I've heard people use that as a verb before to describe like, I mean, even when I was like done watching the movie, I was like trying to put the pieces together. I'm like, is Grace just like an actress that's like being paid and I'm like on an elaborate television set right now? I mean, I was like, kind of having these thoughts like kind of toward the end of the movie, which I guess speaks to like its convincingness and its power. So, I mean, a brief synopsis for anybody that isn't already familiar is that basically Truman Burbank is this guy who has lived his entire life on a television show that he is the star of and he doesn't know it. And he lives on this like in this like planned community that's like inside a giant movie set, which we'll get to later. And there's hidden cameras everywhere and everybody in his life is actors and actresses. So like his love interests, which I have some questions about, his best friends who like always has a six pack of the same beer in every scene. He's got that same six pack. And like his community and whatever is just like horribly, horribly idyllic. It, watching this actually reminded me a lot of that SpongeBob episode where Squidward goes to that weird gated community that's other Squidwards.
Oh, hell yeah.
And every day he goes and he gets canned bread and goes to his clarinet lesson. And then eventually he hates it like he's in hell.
That's a good one, man.
Yeah, that's going to be a different episode. It's top 10 darkest SpongeBob
episodes. Yes. Oh my god.
So the plot of the movie is basically like Truman, through suspicious things start happening and he starts to suspect what might be the truth, and it's like it's about him trying to uncover the truth of what's happening to him and trying to get out of the island. So where do we want to start with this? Gideon, when was the first time you saw this movie, and kind of give me your overall high level thoughts and reactions and
that
sort of thing.
So I saw this pretty late, honestly, about 10 years ago now, maybe 9 years ago for the first time. I've only seen it maybe 3 times all the way through so far. So my old roommate had showed this to me, and I just remember how hyped he was to show me the movie, and it like totally blew me away at the time. I just thought it was really cool. Probably one of the cooler movies I'd seen. I hadn't seen too much stuff back then. I was just really taken away with it and thought it was very like future thinking with lots of, you know, social media and whatever, and people doing Twitch streams and stuff like that. And so I thought it'd be a fun one to revisit. It also, I think it had its 25th anniversary last year because they came out with like a nice 4K restoration for it and everything. I mainly just wanted to revisit it, refamiliarize myself with it. And I just think it's super fun, and it taps into lots of things like paranoia and being watched and, you know, thinking people are lying to you and different things like that. So,
Okay. Neil, what about you, man? What are your, give me your high level thoughts and kind of your high level reaction before we get into the nitty gritty.
We'll get into the high level thoughts. The first like major reaction I had to this movie is that I feel like there's actually some kind of biblical allusions here. Where Truman is functionally living in like Garden of Eden style environments. Like, yeah, he's not like king of the world, but you know, he's in an idyllic town, white picket fence, all the good stuff. And through the actions kind of sparked off by a woman, he leaves paradise where I'm forgetting his name, the director,
Peter Weir.
Ed Harris, the director in the show,
right?
Where, you know, Ed Harris is functionally God to Truman in a lot of ways. And without getting too much into the plot, you know, it's Truman is Adam leaving paradise. Now, I'll expand on that a little bit later. One other thought I had was, I don't know if it's in the original Matrix or in one of the sequels, but I remember there being something about how, like, the machines are talking to Neo, and they explain, we tried to create, like, a paradise on Earth for you in your little stasis bubbles, but the human mind rejected it, so we turned it into the late 1990s. But Truman ultimately is like rejecting his reality because it's like too idyllic.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that kind of segues in nicely to something I wanted to talk about. So I asked everybody to kind of come up with a topic of discussion, like a unique topic of discussion to bring to the show that they wanted to talk about with this movie. And the thing that I guess I didn't really take away from this movie in particular, but a string of movies that came around out around this time. There are, by my count, like almost five or six different movies that came out at the very end of the 1990s about like an office worker who is bored with life and then and like bored with the entire system and then escapes it and some crazy events transpire to like get them out of that rut. It's like as a nation, we were to what you were speaking to, Neil, it's like the zeitgeist of the time was like, we have it so good, and the 1990s were so safe and wonderful for a lot of the American population, and like abroad too at that time, that we were all like longing for some like collective danger, like some, you know, kind of to steal the analogy from The Matrix, like the trip down the rabbit hole, as it were. So like Fight Club came out around that time, 99. American Beauty came out 99. Truman Show came out 98. Office Space came out around the same time, which is definitely a parody of this culture. Falling Down came out in like 94, 95, which is kind of similar. And I think there's maybe two or three others that are in that same category. So it's like we as a nation, we're just going through this weird thing where like I've experienced that in my own life, right? Where things have been too nice or too comfortable and too rote and too boring. And all of a sudden, like I'm in a bad mood for zero reason because there's nothing like challenging going on. And there's nothing like, there's no obstacle to overcome. I think that's true for people on a individual level. And I think that that seeps into how we kind of function as a society as well. Cause we're just, you know, obviously just made up of a bunch of different individuals. So I don't know. What do you guys think about that? Like, do you guys think there's any merit to that theory? Or, I mean, I don't need your confirmation to say that there's merit to the theory. I mean, those movies all exist and they all contain similar themes. But, I mean, what do you guys think?
Yeah, that's interesting to think about. And I feel like this movie and a lot of those movies you talked about, they touch on almost like maybe feeling stuck in place, wanting to break out of where you've come from or what you've known, and you know, no matter if it's dangerous or whatever it is, you're just getting like a restless feeling. I think this movie and those other ones touch on it and kind of explore it in lots of interesting ways, and I wonder if like Y2K also played a big part into that, almost like that, you know, it's the new century, everything's coming up, it's the new millennia. You know, the future is here, and wanting to take it and grab hold of it, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I sometimes wonder if that angst was part of a sudden shift to office work being mainly done on computers. Like, I you know, sometimes I go into the office and I sit for 8 hours on my laptop and I get up to get a lunch and go out to coffee with my people, but otherwise we're sitting on our laptops, and sometimes I think to myself, it's like, what did people even do in their offices before computers were invented? I feel like I spend 90% of my time in the actual office, like trying to figure out things to do on my laptop between like meetings. Mm-hmm. Right. So you wonder if some of that angst was like just a whole generation of men that were all of a sudden like, oh, I'm going to be locked down to this working at this freaking workstation and putting numbers into an Excel file and for 8 hours a day under fluorescent lights. It's like humans weren't designed to do that. And all of a sudden we become like really angsty about it, even though, you know, we're not scrounging for food, you know, we're not hunter gatherer society. We're mm-hmm. getting 401ks and a nice salary off of it, presumably, and things like mm-hmm. this. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of threads to pull out there. What do you think, Neil?
Yeah. I think that there's like, definitely I think this movie works on like, you can just sort of take it and like just like the base paranoia of like Truman experiencing that, he realizing that he's on a television show and running with that, and then I think that there are like legitimate like philosophical questions you can ask. So I think it does a really good job of like threading that needle without being pretentious.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good way to say it. I think this movie definitely like rides a really interesting line between being like a fun, normal movie that everybody can watch and being like a little bit more than that. We'll go into that deeper. Who wants to go on to their topic?
Do you want to go ahead, Neil?
Yeah. So, you know, my thesis in this essay, I will talk about Truman and the fall of man. Mm-hmm. So premise of the movie, I think, is important for us to establish. So Truman Burbank is the first human to be legally adopted by a corporation. Mm-hmm. So I think it's explained like he was an unwanted pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, whatever company Ed Harris runs or is the director of adopted him to start this show where they film his life 24/7. And there's a lot of like instances where we see flashbacks to his like growing up and time in high school. I think in the movie he's 30 during like the main timeline.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Which, you know, just quick side tangent, like, oh my God, he owns his own house and is married at 30. What the, oh man, what am I doing wrong?
I feel you.
But there's a lot of times in his life where they say that it's like an unscripted show with no editing, but like you clearly see, like, even before he starts to realize things are off and they're trying to like course correct him, he's having these moments where there's the illusion of choice. Mm-hmm. Where I like the most significant one is probably that he has a crush on a girl at his high school named Sylvia.
Yeah.
But she's been written as like a background character. She's an extra, maybe a featured extra, but she's not part of the plot. He doesn't have the option to go and talk to her and make her the love interest in his life. They've already cast his love interest. They literally throw her into his arms.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, you know, she seems to have developed like legitimate feelings for him. The crush, not his wife, who I think one of the best visual gags in the movie is as he's figuring things out, he's going through their wedding album.
Yeah.
And he sees her crossing her fingers in their like vows picture.
Incredible.
you know, just great moment. But the woman that he has a crush on, he finally like finds a moment to meet her, quote unquote, alone. She takes him to a secluded place and like tries to explain to him that his life is a television show. But she does it, of course, in like the most roundabout way possible, so that he doesn't fully understand the moment. But she at least plants the seed of doubt in his head, and that eventually leads to him you know, fighting to break free of his confines, so he's been given the fruit of knowledge and has to leave Eden. Ultimately, though, like, I think there's also something to be said there. Like, as much as Ed Harris tries to control things and is acting as a godlike figure, he's not God. He is not perfect. And so, you know, his Eden is flawed and his control is flawed. But that's my take. That's where my
mind
went.
That. That's cool, man.
Yeah, so essentially your take boils down to the Truman Show is like it's more biblically allegorical than maybe some people would give it credit for.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I'm gonna toss it out there. I think it holds up.
Okay. And, well, I'm gonna lower the IQ of the discourse here. Go ahead, Gideon. Go before I ruin this.
You're fine. I do want to add on, even Christoph mentions, you know, before everything kind of goes to shit, he's like determined to get basically his version of the Immaculate Conception, but it's a televised version, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's really interesting. That's awesome, Neil. I hadn't thought about it like that. So I feel like there's so many different ways you can pull out this movie and get like a different appreciation or understanding. So that's really cool. But yeah, go ahead, Sam.
Out of what's his wife's name?
Meryl.
Meryl, Sylvia, or Vivian? You got to pick one. Vivian is going to be his replacement wife when they write Meryl out of the show.
We had like zero screen time for Vivian, so I would also go Sylvia.
Okay. Neil, you said Sylvia?
Sylvia, easy answer.
Oh, yeah. She's hot, and she's like subversive. She's like, let me break you. She's like the literal manic pixie dream girl of this movie. I mean, she is, right? Like, if the whole manic pixie dream girl trope is to like, you're going to break somebody out of the boring nothingness of their life and like introduce them to this like whole new world, then definitely that. I mean, that's Sylvia. She's like kind of dark and.
I think she almost was like, do you think she was part of that like movement to break him out to? Because she had that pin. So she's like a fan. How is it going to end? But in her room, the guy who like parachuted in with the sign, that sign is in her room.
Oh, interesting.
So I wonder if they like coordinate that.
What'd she probably say? Got what? Did we lose Neil?
Oh, sorry, I'm here.
Okay. You just cut out at the end of what she just said.
Oh, I was saying that I think she got radicalized like after he started talking to her rather than before.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I think she probably just wanted to be on the show, and then when she's on the show and she kind of sees like how constrained his life really is, then she's like, oh, now we need to break him out.
I did appreciate the world building of this movie. I think that's actually my favorite part of the movie, is them being like, oh yeah, we pay for the show by product placement, that like the wife is always talking in like advertising lingo, which is really funny, you know, about like the hot cocoa or whatever.
Then
they even explain it. They're like, it's all available in the Truman Show catalog, and anybody watching the show can just like get any of the products that are featured through the catalog. I was like, oh, that was like a really interesting way and a quick way of like explaining how the show gets all its money, because it's not going to cut to commercial and have like traditional commercials, right? Like, so that was all really well thought out. One of my major issues with the movie, and you know, I'm willing to suspend my disbelief for a movie like this on one hand, but really the only bit of the whole setup that I don't think is believable is that they have a sound stage that is literally like the size of a small city right outside of Hollywood. They're like, oh, it's visible from outer space.
Oh, the dome.
I'm like, okay, so if, let's say Truman gets hit by a car, God forbid, or has an aneurysm or a heart attack or something. We just got this empty dome that just sits outside Hollywood, unless they birth another kid onto live TV and they start the whole thing over again.
Well, that's why Ed Harris wanted the first on television conception. You know, that you can have you change it from the Truman Show to the Burbank Show.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Generations of people living in this dome forever.
That bit is a little bit too. That's. This is funny because there's a bridge in the movie, but like that bridge is a little bit too far to cross for me personally, that there's this huge terror dome outside the LA area that's visible from space. That part was a little bit like, okay, guys, this is getting a little ridiculous. But
so funny. And then I feel like that's them like capitalizing on how funny and ridiculous it is. And they talk about how they make as much money as like a small country or something. And I'm like, Nintendo could do this. I'm like, Nintendo could totally do this.
But that's like not even that unbelievable, right? Because like I just read something that like the entire GDP of the United Kingdom is like equivalent of the GDP of like the worst U.S. state's GDP, like Mississippi, which is just fucking super funny to me. But I mean, what that puts in context for you is that like I bet like one moderately successful television show in America has produced way more, like I bet like Modern Family has produced more revenue than like the bottom 50% of industrial like countries, you know what I mean? Like Modern Family is producing more value than like Madagascar, right? Like for sure that's got to be true, right? So even that didn't seem, like, it all seemed pretty believable in the universe that they had set up, except for the fact that they had a giant terror dome outside of Los Angeles. Like, just stick it on an isle, like a real, there are so many unsettled islands, you know what I mean? Like, that are just, like, people have private islands, right? Like, get a reasonably sized island and then build up your fake city on this island. The whole it being in a dome outside of Los Angeles is just like,
dude,
I don't know why that bothers me so much. It just, it really bothers me though.
That's so funny. I get it from a logistical standpoint, but it's just too funny for them to not pass up. Literally, like, oh, there's the Hollywood sign and there's Truman behind it or whatever. Like, oh my God. It's ridiculous.
Gideon, what was your topic you wanted to bring in?
So I brought in, let me see what I wrote exactly. Yeah, the joy and comfort of sharing physical media. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So this is just like a very much a comfort watch for me. Good vibes. It feels like, you know, if you have a friend that's not really into movies, or like you're trying to show like a niece or nephew, this could like be a movie that starts their passion for movies, I would think. So this feels kind of like a gift that you can, it's like a treat for both people, like watching it together with someone for the first time. And just kind of having those memories. Like, I have really nostalgic memories of my first time watching this with my old roommate. And even, you know, I still think back like super fondly, like you let me borrow fucking Shadow of Colossus 2 on PS2. And that was like awesome and, you know, unforgettable experience. And I only would have had that at that time, you know, if somebody loaned me a copy. So just kind of appreciating that it exists. And you even see the characters like, oh, can I borrow those tapes? Like the greatest hits tapes or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, that whole bar's livelihood is like the Truman Bar.
Yeah.
So they're like, they're just, you know, people are just getting together and watching the show on like the shittiest, tiniest TV that's in the corner of the bar. And so it just makes me think about that and kind of that fun of sharing just a cool piece of media with people and making memories and talking about it.
You know, sometimes movies unfortunately become dated. Like the example everybody always points to is You've Got Mail, the romantic comedy about the AOL email client, which obviously is like super antiquated at this point. But things become antiquated in more subtle ways too. Like, we as a culture do not do this anymore, where we watch non-sporting events on bars in, or on televisions in public places like bars and restaurants. And we've all seen on the internet those photos of people in Times Square stopping what they were doing and watching the finale of Seinfeld in the middle of Times Square, right? We just don't have national television moments like that anymore because of the way that it's all split up and everybody just streams everything.
There's not a lot of monoculture.
This movie is from a time where like Seinfeld had just ended, I think maybe a year or two before this. So I mean, like, and that was really the last of those shows before all the biggest shows started becoming more cable shows and HBO and things like this. So
ended the same year, May 14th.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. That makes sense. Anyway, it was still the era where that was possible, and they obviously didn't anticipate like this really wouldn't be happening anymore after this. There's definitely something to be said. I mean, like, this isn't a fictitious television program, but like, ask your parents where they were when like the O.J. Simpson verdict came in. Like, they'll tell you they were watching TV in a public place and every TV had it on, just like it would be in this, you know, if the episode where Truman lost his virginity, I'm sure was watched by every, which we'll get into in a second here. I'm sure it was like the highest rate, you know, like when Ed Harris is going through the at the very end, he's like, I watched you take your first steps. I watched you lose your first tooth. And like, he definitely saw the episode where like Truman got finger banged for the first time, or you know, some crazy shit went down. And So let's cut to the chase on this. Like, I think it's actually mentioned in the movie that, like, whenever anything actually goes down between Truman, does Truman have sex with his wife in this movie?
It sounds like yes.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, because they
and
say
she's just very well paid.
Yeah, yeah, she's literally like a prostitute wife. Yeah. Yes.
Neil, what do you think?
Yeah, during the interview that Ed Harris has with the news outlet, he's like, Merrill will be leaving, but I'm still intent on having the world's first like on-screen conception. So whether or not like she had, I think she was going to if the events of the movie hadn't gone the way they had.
Right. Well, and there's a scene earlier in the movie where I think like Truman comes home and she's waiting there and she kind of like leans in and like touches him here and then kisses him on the cheek. And then it cuts to two people in the real world watching the show. And one guy says to the other guy, he's like, they always just cut away to like the window, like the curtains on the bedroom window, like blowing or whatever. So I think that implies that like sex does happen on the Truman Show and they just don't show anything. Right. It's like,
yeah.
Generally like a PG kind of just things are implied like old movies from the 50s, like when a door shuts and then that's you just kind of you get the idea, which is kind of an elegant way of addressing that problem. Go ahead, Neil.
I think that Ed Harris is deranged enough to just go for it. So during the scene where Truman escapes, before that Ed is just like, why isn't the camera on him? And they bring in Paul Giamatti halfway through the movie.
Love it.
It's like, it doesn't matter, he's just sleeping. And like Ed Harris seems like offended by that comment. So I think Ed Harris is like, no, we're gonna show everything. And the way like fashion works in that town, and I bet like Truman is like the most like vanilla, just like everything's under the sheets. Like we actually keep our clothes on during it.
Yeah, he just takes out of the little pee hole in his pajama pants.
Yeah, like he wears Mormon underwear basically.
You know, now that you mentioned that, I don't think I know what Mormon underwear is even supposed to look like. So
it's like long johns but cut off at the knees and elbow.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll have to do some research after the show. let's see here. How are we doing on time, guys? We are about 40 minutes in. Anything we don't like about the Truman Show? I already aired my grievances regarding the giant Thunderdome outside of LA, and I think that's a little silly. I also think that this movie... Okay. How do I say this in a way that isn't going to hurt either of you?
Oh, you're fine.
I think it veers into slightly. It's not as egregious as the movies I'm about to name. It airs slightly into the territory of Donnie Darko or Fight Club in being a movie that I think thinks it's smarter than it actually is. I'm not saying that's about the people that enjoy this movie, because I enjoyed this movie. I thought it was really fun. I laughed a lot. But I think it is a little bit like, oh man, isn't television's fake and got to get out into the real world? Like, is that like the message of the Truman Show? Like, that's okay. Like, I knew that. Like, I don't know. I think that like it's a really cleverly written, funny, smart movie with like interesting world building. But I don't think that the themes of this movie are all that deep. Like, it's almost exemplified by the idea that his name is Truman, like true man. I'm like, okay, that's a little bit like,
<That's> like, so funny.
Like, it just, what is it? What do you think? What do you think? You're Stanley Kubrick with this shit? Like, come on, guys.
Oh man, that's funny. I guess, I don't know. I never even really thought about it that way, like ever. I just love how it presents this concept. I think it executes the concept so well.
Yeah, it does.
And you get a lot of it, and you get like the audience perspective in the show, and like the actors and some of the sets and stuff, and you know, the sync, everybody's got synchronized driving trying to block them off and stuff.
Can we talk about that for a second?
We gotta talk about some funny scenes, but yeah, go ahead.
Dude, the funniest thing in this movie to me is the lengths that they go to stop him from getting off the island. Like, awesome. You know, first it's like, okay, the ice cream truck is backed up and traffic's literally blocked. Okay, that's like level one. Okay, and then it's like the bridge is closed. Okay, he crosses the bridge. Now there's a forest fire. Okay, he drives through the fake fire. What's our last stop before we gotta just like shoot him in the deck with like a sleep dart? It's like we're gonna fake a nuclear incident right off the island. Like the nuclear power plant is having a giant meltdown, and you can't drive through here. Like escalation of that was just so funny to me. Like I love the scene of him holding Meryl hostage in the car and just driving to get off the island.
Oh my god! How about when he slams on the accelerator and tells her to drive, and they could easily just die horrifically? That's so good. I think there is a cut of like a trailer or something where somebody edited this like a horror movie and put like scary music under it. And I just love that. Just I want a horror cut of this and a horror cut of like American Graffiti. And I want to watch those together.
What's the horror cut of American Graffiti supposed to be like?
I mean, just like, you know, like the guys being creepy, just like talking to the women in the cars. Yeah. Hey, you want to come for a ride? It's like, okay, buddy. You know.
Yeah. Neil, how about you? What was some of the funniest shit in this movie to you?
This is one of the questions I kind of wanted to ask. So, Sam, I know you said like this movie thinks it's smarter than it is, but like, I think that they're. Like maybe it's ahead of its time in some ways, where like when it came out, I think the idea that somebody would like go to these lengths to be on TV was probably like a little more ridiculous. But nowadays you've got like those shows where like the show is just focused around somebody who has like a horrific problem, or you know, like, oh, you know, the Octomom, we're gonna have the Octomom show, or we're gonna have John and Kate plus eight, or, you know, my 1,200-pound life, or whatever the heck.
Right.
And, like, I think some of these people do these weird things. Like, I think Octomom intentionally had herself inseminated, or whatever the process was, to have eight kids at a time on purpose. Like, she wasn't a accident of nature. She was like, no, I'm going to have eight kids all at once. And so, you know, like the people in Truman's life, particularly his wife and best friend, who were, you know, Marlon was his best friend since he was 7 years old.
Marlon.
Yeah, great that name. Guy. Marlon, the vending machine restocker.
Gilbert,
dude, Miss Marlon, my IQ is 72. Six pack of beer, just stocking the vending machine all day.
But but you know, like his wife, you know, they met during high school, I think. You know, like, you know, she's psychotic. You know, to, you know, do what she does for an acting role, like that's insane. Or the woman who played his mother, like you're going to raise a child on television for 18 years nonstop. Like, it's insane.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And like live there too.
And you're going to keep a secret that he, you know, like he's living in a fake world. Like that was something that kind of like annoyed me, is that like I feel like most people have like enough humanity to just say, you know, if I was in that situation and I knew Truman for 23 years, I might tell him the truth. Unless they like cast all psychopaths.
Dude, you're never gonna guess who was considered for the Christoph role before Ed Harris. They wanted it apparently to be Dennis Hopper.
bro.
I think Ed Harris is cast perfectly.
I agree.
Ed Harris is like one of those like. I can't think of like a movie where he was like the lead or like the biggest name on the ticket, but like he is like probably one of the best supporting actors ever. Like
he's great.
He's awesome in The Rock. I think he does.
The Rock is what I was going to mention.
National Treasure, dude.
Oh yeah.
Who the hell is he in National Treasure?
He's like the villain in one of them.
Oh, it might be the second one because I remember. Yeah, Scene Bean is in the first one, but
okay.
You know, the Ed Harris and The Rock is always who like the archetype of who I think of when I think of the whole Neil, like the villain was right the entire time and did nothing wrong. Like, maybe firing the CX gas at San Francisco was a little over the top, but in terms of being a relatable, understandable villain. Ed Harris does a really good job in that movie. Okay, so I think we're coming up on about time here. So let's go to stars. Or what do we want to mention anything before we want to wrap up?
Before we get to stars, I have a question for you guys.
Yeah.
So, Gideon, I haven't met you in real life, despite the fact that we live in Colorado at the same time. So imagine for a moment that you are the subject of you're the subject of the Gideon show.
Oh God.
You know, you've known Sam, basically your whole life.
Yeah.
You know, what is the product placement that Sam brings to the Gideon show?
Oh my God. It's gotta be like Sony and PlayStation related.
I'm responsible for Gideon having any Apple product
sure. He definitely won me over with the iPhone, and I've been using iPhone since I got my first one, and I'm literally like, oh yeah, I love it. It's perfect. It does everything great. And so Sam would be like, the iPhone 14 Plus or whatever, all this tech specs, this kind of screen. Yeah.
The only one of my friends, you'll appreciate this, Gideon, because you know who I'm talking about, but the only one of my friends that I have not been able to yet convince to come over to the Apple side, Tom Porter, still holding out on Android.
Nice.
Although he's this close. Like after he gets next time he has an upgrade available or he needs a new phone, I think he's finally gonna bite the bullet and just go.
Nice.
I think for what it's worth, I probably got Neil. I don't think I mind trick Neil into getting an iPhone, but I remember like when Neil got his first iPhone and he messaged me and he was like, I get it. It's like, welcome to the club, bud. Okay, yeah, that's super funny. I think Gideon does that to me with like steelbooks of 4K Blu-rays and
oh my god,
me with things I don't need. And speaking of which, I think the my 4K copy of The Boy and the Heron is going to be here in like less than a month because it's I pre-ordered it on Amazon, so that'll be cool.
4K steel, nice.
Anything else you guys want to talk about before we wrap up?
I do want to rapid fire some favorite scenes or moments.
Yeah.
Dude, I love when he's on the beach with Sylvia and the dad pulls up. It's like the most non-off-road vehicle possible. It's like a fucking station wagon. I'm like, that thing would be struggling through that sand. So yeah. I just thought that was super funny. And how he like latches on, he's like, we're moving to Fiji. It's like clearly a throwaway line. He's like, Fiji. And it's so like the cosmic randomness of it just makes me laugh.
Did Fiji remind you of Red Dead Redemption 2? Because that's exactly what I thought of.
Yeah, honestly. I think the one shot of Truman when he's in the garden with his ass hanging out is just like hilarious every time I see it. And how she talks about the stupid like slice dicer whatever, and then he brings it up again when he's going like schizo, like maybe he's gonna like slit her throat live on television. So I know he was already making games at this point, but I feel like Kojima saw this movie and was like, I want to be more like Ed Harris, And because, like, when he's doing the, like, almost killing him by drowning him near the finale, and he's like, raise the wind, and oh, more, more. It's, he's, like, constructing, like, this televised orchestra. It's so good.
Yeah. See, Gideon, you need to play the opening of Metal Gear Solid 2 because it starts on a boat during a rainstorm. So I think, I think you're dead on that one.
Lead
so
right into that.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, I think that kind of wraps it up for the things I wanted to talk about with for the Truman Show. I kind of already expressed my thoughts. I really like this movie. Although I would not say that for me, it really ventures into the territory of being a great movie. I would give this like a strong three, like the strongest possible three. That's kind of where it sits for me. It's like good. It's what I expect from like watching a fun, good movie. It like, you know, a five really has to cross into like one of my all time favorites, and a four has to be like a little bit more special, I think. But like, I think this is a really easy movie to recommend. It's short, it's breezy. It's like a little bit smarter than your average like run of the mill movie, and it's like I don't think you should go into this thinking like, oh, I'm gonna watch it because it's like really smart and deep. You should watch it because it is really smart and funny. Though there's a lot of really good jokes and sight gags, just smart, clever writing and humor in here. You know, in comparison to some of those other late 1990s movies about the same thing, I think there are movies that do the same themes in a little bit, but like I don't think this is a stupid comparison because the Truman Show is not trying to be the Matrix, but like out of all those movies, I think the Matrix is like far and away the best one. But this was good and I enjoyed it, and I appreciate you bringing it to the podcast.
Yeah, for sure. You want to go next, Neil?
Yeah, I think I agree with Sam. I think basically the difference between a three and a four, I think I've been bad about what my definitions are between a three and a four and a four and a five, but like there's probably some kind of graph that would explain this, but like the difference between a three and a four is like a level of I can never say this word, specificity.
Yeah.
Where like a three, like a strong three is a movie that you can recommend to just about anybody, and you can be confident that they'll enjoy it on some level. Where a four is like, you have to think about like, oh, is this the movie for them? And then a five can be kind of like the inverse of that. It can be more specific, but it can also be something where it's just like, again, you think anybody would enjoy that. And so for me, I think this is, again, a strong three. Very enjoyable. I think just about anybody could enjoy it. You can get into my pretentious Fall of Man thing, or you can just enjoy it for like a comedy with like some darker tones and some interesting performances. So yeah, strong three for me.
Nice.
All right, Gideon, let's hear it, man.
All right. Yeah, for me, obviously, I've got a lot of love for this movie. I think it might be my favorite performance by Jim Carrey, maybe next to like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. I think he does great in that one too. Yeah, it's just a total classic for me. I think it's just super fun. I do think it is smart and has a lot of interesting ideas and can almost like implore you to think about it a bit more, but you don't really have to if you don't want to. It walks that line really well. And I think it's just kind of an all-time classic for me. I definitely give it a five. I'm not gonna try and bring all fives from my picks. I'm definitely gonna switch it up.
You're not gonna pull Sam.
No, that's okay.
Just pull I'm bringing a 2001 Space Odyssey, guys. How are we gonna feel about this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean a lot of the movies, especially if I haven't seen them, they'll probably be higher. Just because I want to be bringing stuff that I really like, it just to show off some of my personal favorites and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I love this movie. One other quick thing I wanted to shout out is the music. I think the soundtrack is almost like, it is hilarious too, in the way it sounds like a parody of like soap opera music and stuff, but it still feels very sincere to me. I just love this movie, and as I get more familiar, even just like kind of rating movies based on a 5-star scale, I feel like this one, I lost my train of thought with that.
No, I totally understand. I think Neil actually put a voice to the feeling that I had regarding like the difference between a 3, 4, and a 5, right? It's like as it gets better, it becomes more specifically tailored for me personally. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas like 3, I could recommend to anybody. 4 is like, I could recommend it to fewer people, but I think they'll enjoy it more. And a 5 is like a movie that feels like it was made just for me. And it kind of works in the inverse too, where it's like a 1 is a movie that was created just to spite me. Right. Like, definitely relate on that. Well, I think this is a good episode. I think I know what I want to do, since it's my pick for next week. It's another short movie. It is an animated movie by Disney from, I think, the 80s. Does anybody want to take a guess at what it is? I've never seen it. I just know that the box art is sick looking.
Is it Disney, like the Black Cauldron?
Is the Black Cauldron.
Whoa, nice. Okay.
That was incredible, dude.
That I was like, did that even come out in the 80s? Like, I couldn't really.
It
might have been late 70s, but I think Sam's on the right around there.
It's like 1985. Disney. Yeah. Okay. So I don't know anything about this movie other than that a bunch of executives at Disney said like this is too dark to be a Disney movie, and they tried to like put a ride of this movie at Disney World or something, and it was like too scary. So. I'm just kind of into the dark 80s D&D aesthetic of it, and I kind of want to like look into that a little bit more. It just popped up. It seemed like a fun, easy one to do, so I definitely want to take a look at that.
Oh yeah, right. I'm excited. Right. I've never seen it.
Yeah, me neither. Neil, have you seen it?
A long time ago.
Okay, nice. And is it like crappy or do you remember?
Evaluation, but I remember enjoying
fair enough. Sure. Okay, awesome. Well, I will talk to you guys next week then.
Sounds good. Take care, later guys. Have a good one.